Call the meeting to order, please. Okay, we're going to call the July meeting of the Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture Committee to order. Take roll, please.
Chairman Cahill.
Here.
Deputy Chair Litz is not here. Legislator Corcoran is not here. Legislator Criswell.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Maloney.
Here.
Legislator Sperry.
There.
She is.
She's there.
Not in the room, but you have quorum.
Okay, thank you. Let me just wait for Megan to get in here. Grab her. Okay, so I'll accept the motion to accept the approval of the May 30th meeting minutes.
I'll move
submitted.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. So tonight we have a couple of updates coming in. We have the IDA update, and we have the chairman of the IDA board, Mike Hamm, here. And we also have Soil and Water. Soil and Water here? Yes, okay, yep, we're all set then. Okay, so we're going to go give Mike Hamm the floor for a little while, give us an update on the IDA. The IDA hasn't been back in this room since last year. So this
last
is the first
year.
This is the first time this year they've been here to give us a report. So let's see what their activity is and how things are going over there.
So I took over as the chair of the IDA January. Last time, Diane Enya was there, mm-hmm. and she just had a lot of things going on with work down below, so I came into play. So a quick snapshot, the last 6 months of the IDA, the majority on it was just working on staffing, as far as, you know, hiring people, keeping the lights on, keeping the wheels moving, and cleaning up day-to-day housekeeping that we did have ongoing from last year. With the staffing, we did a governance prior to me coming on. We just finalized an organizational chart, so we had a new structure on how the IDA was going to operate and how we were going to answer. Okay, from the CEO, we changed over to an executive director, which I'll get to that really quick, and where everybody answered and fell into line. And that's online. Anybody can view all this paperwork on our website. We did hire an administrator, Lisa Purcell. She is knocking it out of the box, and I want to attribute a lot of that to Jay Mahler over there, which had her under her wing, along with Amber was tremendous. So we thank the county on every end for Vicky's team in getting us through some tough times here. But with all great things, they come to an end, and you know, we did get Lisa. Lisa is, like I said, well versed. We went in. We needed an accountant at the time, so. And somebody oversee the books, so we hired BST. They came in as our CFO for hire. Not one problem, not an ounce of problem, keeps us in compliance, does everything the proper way. He's currently executing checks. He's on our banking accounts to monitor activities. So everybody is staying within the guidelines. We also, in between, you know, while this is all going on, we're also trying to entertain potential clients, all right? New applicants and going through. Joe and myself, we've been meeting with them prior to see what the fit was, to walk them through whether or not the IDA is the proper place for them to be. We give them all the information, and then we lead them to the corridor of filling out an application online and getting it over to us. We haven't really seen a lot of activity on the applications. We've talked to a lot of people, and some things are not good fits. You guys are aware of Zinc 8, obviously. We did the second public hearing about a month ago out in the town of Ulster. No one showed up. We left the 30-day window open, and we moved ahead on the resolution on that. Joe, if you'd like to hear a little any of the details on the taxable, non-taxable bonds, anybody interested, you know. Joe is counsel. This is Joe Scott. He's counsel to the IDA. Joe has been around as long as this building was built, okay, so he has the working knowledge of everything that's going on. But
is that board counsel or bond counsel?
He's bond counsel.
Who's board counsel?
Well, you
I actually play
both, yeah.
I play both roles.
Yeah.
That's not always recommended.
So, if anybody has any questions about anything on Zinc 8, I mean, I know everybody was aware of what's going on. Okay. From that, once again, we continue to take in things every day. We listen to the applicants come our way, and we're just waiting. We did put out an RFP for an executive director. Our CEO has changed positions from a CEO to an executive director. We felt that was best on the branding. And we had 14 applicants come our way for that. After review, we started sending out another questionnaire and started breaking it down a little bit. And we broke it down to basically, you know, are you currently a resident of Ulster County? That was like a big one, because it wasn't too clear on where they had to come from. We had some from San Francisco. They thought it was remote, you know, and we told them, no, that's... And then that started really knocking people down a little bit. So currently we have four in the queue, and four very impressive resumes. And we tasked a team to start the interview process, and that's going to begin very shortly. So I think once the creation of the CEO is or the executive director comes on board, I think everything takes a, you know, everybody gets to take a little deep breath, because currently the executive director's position is being, you know, I mean, it's myself, you know, I go to Joe, bounce with Joe and Lisa, you know, so like the three of us right now are operating in that capacity. But that'll take place pretty soon, and then we should, you know, I don't want to say we're not up and running right now, because we are. It's just that some of the potential clients are coming our way, and the fit is not there. Mm-hmm. And we're being pretty, you know, pretty careful on how we move ahead.
You can know, I ask you a question about the executive director? Is that a voting member?
Well, no.
No.
Okay. He is not. He or she is not a voting member.
Got it. Okay.
He's basically the business side of the IDA, right?
Yeah. If you go to our organizational chart, you'll see that position will answer to the chair and the board. Mm-hmm. So everything goes back to the board.
Sometimes EDs are voting members. It's weird.
Right.
Sometimes,
right.
But I always think it's cleaner if you don't. So
right.
I'm glad to agree.
But other than that, you know, we continue to meet with people. We're trying to push the needle ahead for economic development here in Ulster County.
Do you mind if I ask a couple questions?
Absolutely.
So, Zinc 8, I know that they had a lot hinging on that bond application and from their financing. Has that worked in their favor? Are they in good shape for their projected plant out at iPark? Do you guys know? Or
go ahead, Joe.
We've been meeting with them. They have a fairly extensive working group, because they have an equity team, and they have a financing team, and they have a whole series of other consultants. We've been meeting with them probably every 3 weeks, and we've met all of their time benchmarks. We did the approvals for the tax-exempt bonds quickly and efficiently. We did the approvals for the taxable bonds quickly and efficiently. So we're ready to go when they're ready to go. But they, the issues that they're addressing are, you know, finalizing their leasing structure at the site, finalizing their equity, both in Canada and in the U.S. with respect to the sale of stock and generating cash in that mm-hmm. way, and then moving on to provide for the sale of the bond. So the short answer is that we've done everything we need to do. The IDA has been very responsive. The county ledge has been responsive by way of approvals. The county executive has been responsive with respect to approval. So we're in a position to move forward as soon as Zinc is ready to go.
Anybody on the committee have any questions?
I had a question. Do you have any entities in clawback situation right now? And if so, how's that going?
We do not. We had one, which I imagine everyone's aware of, which was the nursing home up there. And we didn't want to be punitive on that. We tried to reach out to them. What was that, 6 months in the making on that?
Yeah, we've coordinated with the city on sending them a bill. The city is comfortable with that level of action, because they were on their pilot only 1 year. So this IDA prides itself on being very enforcement sensitive, and they did not meet their job numbers, And as soon as that occurred, we called them on it. The IDA called them on it. They went to governance, and we did not get satisfactory answers. And so we immediately terminated the documents and put them back on the tax rolls. So there was only 1 year where they got the benefit of the pilot agreement, but they're back on the tax rolls and they're paying normal taxes.
And if you see an organization that is, you know, really struggling and trying to make it work, you'll work with them.
So Peter, we had that. We had that, for instance, happen. That came to us on two different projects. Mm-hmm. And once again, we're not looking to put anybody out of business. We're trying to work with you to create something. So along those lines, got with counsel. We went through governance with that too at the time when it was on governance. And we restructured the pilot. The numbers that were presented to a very previous board to get these projects off, the numbers were inflated. And we pretty much, we understood that by reading through it, and we contacted them. And we had them come in, and we sat down, went over the numbers on the projects, on the jobs that they were going to create, and they didn't jive at all. Nor did the one guy who was very forthcoming. He says, I don't even know how we could ever hit that number. And we said, okay. He goes, you know, what can we do? We restructured the pilot, mm-hmm. and, you know, it seems to work. It was two different locations it happened to. So what we did is this, you know, the board last year, what we did is we came through and through governance, we went through all these projects again, older projects, to make sure everybody was in compliance. But once again, we didn't want to be punitive on people and just say, that's it.
Right.
So we did ask them, you know, sat them down and asked them if they agreed to a restructure, and they did. So it worked out pretty well for everybody.
Great. Glad to hear that.
Let me just add one thing.
Go ahead.
There is periodically bills introduced in the legislature which would take away exactly what you're talking about, namely a consideration of a hierarchy of remedies, you know, termination, clawback, restructuring, or maybe they just had a bad year. Mm-hmm. You know, COVID has impacted a lot of businesses.
Sure.
Is it fair to immediately go to a clawback situation in the context of that kind of situation? But I can tell you that the New York State Legislature has looked at bills that would eliminate that level of discretion at the IDA level, mm-hmm. and would require immediate termination and or clawback without any consideration for the facts and circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And do those bills have legs? Does it seem
well,
like it's possible?
Well, you never know what's going to happen at the state. I don't mind. I don't want to get onto a soapbox here, but you never know what's going to happen in the New York State Legislature when something gets introduced.
That's true. Legislator Maloney had a question.
Yeah, there's all kinds of bills too. I think there's one to dissolve all IDA's entire structure that they're going to be talking about next year. But is there any other businesses you're looking at? Because I know we spoke a year and a half ago, and I think you used the term. There are some in the hopper, and I know one of them that I had talked to you about that seems like a completely illegal pilot would be the hotel over in Saugerties, which kind of violates the state enabling legislation and doesn't really live up to even what they said they were going to have. I think, Mike, you said something about they claimed in their original application that they were going to have more space for conferences and things like that than they even ended up with. It's a pretty ordinary hotel that's not paying a lot of school taxes right now. I have people in my town complain about it continuously. Are we doing anything on that?
So, Joe, as we were moving along here and we started doing the cleanup process out in October, November, coming in, and then, you know, we kind of got lopped into a restructuring of our own on the IDA end, and I switched out as chair of governance, and we had all this stuff laid out, and Diane is taking over from there, and then the restructuring of the IDA in general, you know, in entirety, you know, the staffing and everything. Some things kind of taken a back seat. We do have things, other projects that we're looking at. I know exactly what you're talking about. That was in my lane to take a look at. We were going through it because the other ones that I talked about restructuring and redoing, one was a hotel. Okay. and the other one was a food industry. But we are looking, we are going back through, and we're looking at a bunch of those. Some of them, I think some of them are so far back that we can't even get to them.
Well, we may not have had a clawback agreement with some of these very
old ones. Yeah. We put the clawback in, I think.
But if there's a particular project you want us to look at, you know, come ahead and let us.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hotels in general.
Yeah,
if it's not part of a baseball stadium or something. Really, never should have got it. I know that's not on you.
You
better know if you were there, but.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any questions? Yeah, let's hear you.
I'm wondering how the culture of the new board is and how everyone is working.
Good question.
You know what? I got to tell you something. I always said this is on my union leader hat, okay? I'm only as good as my supporting cast, and I have a great supporting cast over there right now. You know, I call upon people, and they step it right up, all right? Some people have other things in the hopper for themselves, be it new positions at new jobs they have to really focus on, you know, because at the end of the day, they have to focus on their job also. But, you know, everybody that I call upon, and being out in the field in construction, I'm the king of delegating. You know, I mean, I think that's why everybody is in there. They're all smart people, and they all have a particular, you know, one steady thing that they thrive on, you know, and they know. Like Steve Kelly, I know what I can do with Steve Kelly and Rachel Silverman and Rashida and Diane. I know where to go in there, so it works really well. It works really well for me, you know, and I think it works really well for the board. I think the board does an outstanding job.
Good job, guys. No. Again, so I just want to thank you guys. I know that you're going through a lot of change, a lot of churn there, and it's hard enough as it is. It's a hard job that you guys do anyway. It's thankless. It's without any compensation. And not for you, Joe, but for the other guys. It's without compensation for the board members, and I know you devote a lot of your time to that, and it's greatly appreciated. And I just want to commend you on some of the actions that you're taking on being put a little more scrutiny on the things that are coming before you and, you know, trying to rebuild confidence in the IDAs that have been, you know, deteriorated by other counties in the state that have done a very poor job. Ours has always been, I felt, pretty reasonable and done a fairly good job. There are a couple projects here and there maybe that we all don't agree with, but I think overall, I think the IDA in Ulster County has always done a pretty good job, and I just appreciate the fact that you guys are really stepping it up now with that new board, and hope things continue to go forward, and hopefully, you know, you do get some folks that want the right, that fit the mold and looking for the right help to build their business.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yep. Okay. All right. So next on our agenda, we have an update from Soil and Water.
I'm Jake Wiedemeyer.
Jake.
County Soil and Water. This is Travis. He's been with us a little over a year. We work very closely together. So you're looking at pretty much 2/3 of the core staff. And we have Margaret, who's been with us forever, and she's going to retire probably by the winter. And then we hired another program assistant, Jocelyn, so she's in training, and she's a nice person. So we are, right? So Jake and Travis are here. And basically, we have the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Program team as well. There's four people. We partner with the NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, Department of Ag, used to be the Soil Conservation Service. So they give us office space, computers, phone, and we work closely with Oscar, right? So we parlay with programs. We have engineering support. We have Eleanor just started. She's right out of college, so we're corrupting her. And then we have free IT support as well. And then we have our board of directors, and I have to say that they've been very proactive and helpful with us, all of them. Okay. Next slide, please. So this is what we're doing. You know, you've seen me before. I think the last time I did this was a Zoom presentation. So here I am in the flesh. We do a lot of agricultural work, stream bank stabilization, stream restoration, riparian buffer projects, no-till cover crops, nutrient management, barnyards, hay recommendations, crop recommendations. But the current projects are Right now we're doing the Elk Bush Kill Project in the town of Shandaken, and it's an oliveria. It's a nice little valley up there, but it's DEP funded, so we're doing a full restoration project. So it's about 1,200 linear feet of stream restoration. We're in contract with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, and the estimated cost, it's out to bid right now. We're probably going to start construction at the beginning of August, about $1.2 million. So the photo on the left is the existing conditions and aerial view, and then the plan view on the right, that's the design showing the in-stream structures, if anyone can see that. Next slide, please. This winter, we're doing, this is a plan that it's out to bid right now. Okay, anything over $35,000, we got the there's procurement guidelines we have to follow with the county. So this is in the town of Marbletown. So what we're doing is the farmer has an outdoor barnyard. He's beaten up the land. There's manure runoff. So we're going to cover it, have concrete. So it's a cost share program. That's with the AEM program, Agricultural Environmental Management. So that's a shot on the right of us surveying. So we work with a private engineer. We do the surveying. We assist with the design. We do the construction inspection. We do all the administrative, all the financials. So that's part of the state Agricultural Environmental Management program. Next slide, please. Also on tap, we're doing another rotational grazing system. It's about 7,500 linear feet of fence for a beef herd. So again, we're going to get that done. That's going to be out to bid next week because it's over 35,000. So it's the second big one we've done in the last couple of years. It's at the old Arrowhead Farm in the town of Rochester. So there's a lot going on there. And we're out in the summertime. We do a lot of surveying. Again, this state, they have all these rounds of funding. This is a competitive grant, round 27. So we were awarded $231,000 and change in state funding. And the farmer, it's either cash or in-kind. It's typically 75% from the state, 25% from the farmer. And again, we do a lot of engineering support. Next slide, please. And this is what we completed since we had last spoken. This is a little gem of a project. If anyone ever wants to go for a ride, don't give us a call. We'll take you around. And Travis will treat you to lunch. but this is the Panther Kill, and again, this is DEP funded. So part of our contract is water quality improvements, so anything with fine sediment, you know, we try to address. But it's multifaceted, so there's a water quality benefit, there's a habitat benefit. We work with the USGS with fish studies. We protect life and property as well. So these are multifaceted jobs. So we got that done. A lot of vegetation. We used to rock everything. So now it's more, we're concentrating more on vegetation and natural channel design versus riprap. So again, this is one of the gems that we did last year. It was about $511,000. And again, these projects support a lot of local contractors as well. Okay, this is another project we did last summer. It was really busy. This was the Bowl of Doom. It was just right outside of, it was in Greene County, but since the Stony Clove watershed, that basin is predominantly in Ulster County. We have an agreement with Greene County. But this is the biggest project we've done to date, probably one of the biggest ones within all the basins, Delaware, Greene, and Sullivan. So we got that done. So before, the house was removed, the septic system, everything was removed, and then we sloped it back and then did natural channel design, and again, a lot of veg. And we did a lot of willow planting during the drought, so we irrigated. I mean, we were there weekends irrigating, so when you're installing a structure and you have plants involved, you don't want to put the plants in after the rock's in place. So we've had a high success rate. So the veg really locks things in, so you can rock everything, but you know, native vegetation really helps.
And why willow? Just a quick question.
Willow is very, it's native. We use native plants. And it's very vigorous. So after it establishes about a year, those roots really hold the soil in place, mm-hmm. and they take right over. So then that's like within the stream along the bank. And then we use other species like button bush, red osier dogwood, you know, just along the riparian area.
Thank you.
So now we're on to the riparian area. So we have the Catskill Streams Buffer Initiative. Bobby Taylor runs this. He's like the mayor of the Eastern Catskills. The thing is, us compared to other counties, if you want to do like a full-scale project where a contract to do so many linear feet a year, so say Delaware County has to work with 2 landowners, Bobby has to work with 10. Mm. So he just has that ability to get along well with others, and he puts 110%. And if we have a major planting, all hands on deck. So even I'm out there planting, and he makes you work. You go home sore. So that's another thing we do. Again, that is DEP funded. Next slide, please. Climate resilient farming. Okay, a lot of this stuff has been done for years for farmers, cover crops, no till. But what we did is we applied for climate resilient farming round 6, and we were awarded $129,000. We're able to purchase a no-till drill. We used some of our own funds to purchase it. So we're starting off slow. We started off with a 7-foot wide ESH drill. And this spring there has been demand. And then the fall, I think we're going to be booked. So Travis and I are going to be running around, hauling the drill around. So there's been a lot of interest. And so far the farmers have been very happy where they can control the seed depth. And their germination rates, I mean, seed isn't cheap, so they're able to control their germination rates with the depth on that. And we're thinking, you know, do at least 1 year and buy a 12-footer to accommodate the larger operations. And, yep, next one. So we did our cover crop mini grant program. It was our first year doing it. It's up to $5,000 per farm or 71 acres, so the cost share rate for like a single species like winter rye, $70 an acre. For multi-species like rye, oats, or you know, some legumes, it's $82 an acre. That's the state cost share rate. So we had 16 farms. Originally it was 18, but some had late harvest, so they couldn't get the cover crop in. So again, for the first year, we did very well. 531 acres we cost shared. We reimbursed local farmers $37,675. So again, we're dealing with increased input costs. That's fuel, fertilizer. You know, a lot of people had to irrigate. It cost them a lot of money. So this was very critical to offer this program in 2022 with the high input costs. So we're figuring on doing this for at least 3 years. You know, we want people to adopt it more. And, you know, we might just continue it. But I think this year, like my goal, I wouldn't mind seeing like 700 acres of cover crops in the ground. Okay, am I going to read this all? So basically we do a lot of house calls. Sometimes it's on the phone. Sometimes people have a problem with foundation drainage, stream bank erosion, surface drainage, and whatever they need, erosion issues, pond site enhancement, permitting assistance. So 167 people, individuals, contacted us. So basically it's about 3 people a week that call the office for assistance. So we get anything from a phone call to a house call. We do it all. We're working with the Department of Environment. We're having a lot of fun with them. We're doing the second year of the Arbor Day Initiative, where we have state funding and they have county funding to help pay for trees for municipalities. The last project was the George Washington Elementary School. They did a planting there with the teachers. So last year we had 5 municipalities. There's 3 so far, but I think this will be our last year. 11 municipalities were provided with technical assistance in 2022. And that's based off our state reporting numbers. We try to help everybody anywhere with stormwater issues, culvert pipe sizing. So if they need local assessors call us, because we do soils group worksheets, district involvement with updating Ulster County Farmland Protection Plan. So Len Tantillo is on the Farmland Protection Board, and I go with him. We participate with the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. You know, we try to help out any way we can. We're working with Cornell Cooperative Extension with the Meet the Farmer event. So last year we had it at the Phoenicia Diner. And the idea of that is for local farmers, and all of them participated with AEM and worked with us with conservation practices. The Phoenicia Diner cooked their food and served it to people. So the public gets to interface with the farmers, and I think that's a good way to promote farmers that do the right thing. People are kind of losing touch with ag, so they get to talk with the farmers and also give the farmers a pat on the back for working with us doing conservation practices. So even though they get a lot of state funding from us, the commitment they have a lot of skin in the game. They're spending thousands out of their own pockets to do the right thing and working with us. It's all about the relationships. And then also we're working with Cornell with a riparian buffer assessment on the Wallkill River. And we're working, what else are we doing with them? Actually, CCE is at my place today. We're doing an equipment demo. So there's a lot of good partnerships, good relationships, participation and assistance with the lower SOPA stream management plan. District's done a lot of work on that creek over the last 20 years. What else are we doing here? Technical and cost share assistance to 40 agricultural producers. So again, anything from cover crop program, nutrient management recommendations, soil health recommendations, you know, we do a little bit of everything. So Travis and I are both certified crop advisors. And we're kind of like hen's teeth. The test is pretty brutal. You have to know your stuff. So that's something that we provide to the farmers free of charge. And then we do the soils group worksheets for ag value assessment. So in the wintertime, we're pretty busy doing that. And that, so we did 49, which encompassed 2,281 acres that's receiving a tax break, agricultural land. That was for 2022. All right, so funding sources, we did get our budget increase, or our funding increase from Ulster County. Thank you very much. You know, in the past, what we were receiving barely covered one position, and there's three core staff, so that does help. We do get roughly $70,000 in billable reimbursable hours from the DEP contract. Sometimes I'm their slave. Like, I'm allocated up to 50% of my time to work on this contract. And then we're getting, with the state, we have performance measures, funding, and also state reimbursement. So since we, greater than 50% of our expenses, the county doesn't give us enough money to cover half our expenses, the state gives us $60,000. And then if we meet all these performance measures, we get additional funding in. But we use that funding for projects. So again, cover crop program, we bought the no-till drill partly with that funding. We're buying a new truck, so we're due for a new one. And we've done, we supplemented other agricultural projects with that funding. So if we have a contract that's 2 years old, then it's like, well, this is $50,000. It's going to cover that, and the farmer's going to cover $20,000. But with inflation, you know, they're not able to afford certain best management practices, especially like lumber, steel, concrete, you know, fencing. And again, the AEM program, we put in a lot of hours. The state's been generous with that. We do stormwater services. Like, we go all over the place. Like, again, it's a partnership with the other districts. We're all family, so we teach the four-hour erosion sediment control course for other counties. We've got a Greene County, Rockland. We went down to New York City. That was a pain. It was worth it. They needed. So if they sponsor a course, that's a check with their performance measures. And then with the grants we get between CRF and Round 27. So that's part of our funding. And then because of what we do as a district, this is all we do. Part B funding, that's $6,000, that's Arbor Day. Part C, again, that's the mini grant cover crop program. That was, hopefully we're gonna do, we're working with 22 farms this year. And then conservation innovative grants, that's to help out with existing programs, ag programs. Again, our performance measures, AEM that we bring in. So we have a lot going on. So again, with our contract with the city, that's $1.2 million. And so basically the CISPE program, you know, it's about $35,000 a year. So just us existing and doing our work, we bring in, you know, about $1.7 million, $1.8 million a year. Sometimes it's more, depends on the scope of the projects we're doing.
Great. Great. Well, thank you. Anybody have questions?
There's more.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Almost done. All right, so you heard about what we're doing, what we did do, and what we're doing now. Where are we heading as an organization? And basically, we want to expand services. We serve the taxpayer, and we're the ag people, all right? And I love ag. Increase cost share funding, you know, with the Part C funding. Expand our AEM program. The state is giving us more money. I don't want to read this verbatim. So the thing is, the state, they gave us $100,000 every 2 years, two-year contract cycle, and we're able to do little ag projects with that. But with inflation, you know, it doesn't go that far. So the state actually doubled it, which is good. So with that $200,000, we're hoping to do at least four ag projects. And with a lot of the full-time agricultural and part-time, they could really use assistance. I mean, just like irrigation pipe, I was floored. It's $14 a linear foot for irrigation pipe. Who can afford that? So just for one project, for the pipe alone, not including excavation or the electrical hookup, $32,000 in pipe. Yeah. And again, commodity prices have remained flat. So that's the gist behind this. The cost share programs. Farmers can't afford it. You know, our prices have remained flat for 40 years. Okay. What else? Increased technical assistance to Ulster County residents. The reason why I say increased, Travis has really been exceptional. Working with me, going out on his own. So some days he's going east and I'm going west. So in the past, it was only primarily me doing most of the site visits, but just having two of us. In the future, once we get Jocelyn settled in, we'll hope to get a third technician. Increased stormwater services and district training, so we have a certified professional in erosion and sediment control on staff, which is me. And with the county, we provide, it's like a 4-hour course that's required by law. We provide it to county employees free of charge. So if you're helping us out to pay the bills, we offer it for free. And we do that every 3 years. Or if the county wants us to do it, usually do it in November. Continue DEP partnership for stream restoration projects. Okay, we're doing our due diligence. They're very happy with us. So next year we're going to exceed the contract requirements. We're helping them out with their filtration avoidance waiver. So right now we have a $12.2 million 5-year agreement with the DEP, and we're anticipating it's going to be up to $20 million for the next 5-year agreement, and then hopefully hire additional staff. So that's it. Oh, one more slide.
Thank you very much. That was very informative, and we are well aware of the work that you folks are doing, and one of the reasons why we increased your funding last year, right? Because I think that we got really good feedback from the farmers and other folks in the county of how much you're helping. And one of the things that, anybody have any specific questions for them? Legislator Hewitt?
You mentioned that you covered up some contaminated soil with cement. What was that project?
A barnyard project. So instead of having the manure, a lot of people have outdoor feedlots. Mm-hmm. They throw ground bales out in wintertime. Name it March, it turns into soup. So during spring thaw, you have runoff, and it's really difficult for the farmer to collect that manure and spread it in the field. You don't want rocks going through a manure spreader. So the best thing to do for herd health, for feed management and nutrient management, is to have a feeding area during the winter months. It's a very common practice. Put them on concrete with a roof, and then the farmers could collect that manure and spread it in the spring. And what we're finding, what I found too, as a hay producer, is that manure is king. I like to pick on Dennis about hay. Mm-hmm. But manure is king. You know, if you're doing forage crops, and so they're going to reduce, you know, commercial fertilizer. One thing I found about manure too is, like, when we have drought years, that organic matter really holds the moisture, namely the morning dew, you know. Right now, at the point, it's starting to drop. So it really helps, you know, with climate resilience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have another one. You said for the cover crop program, you mentioned winter rye. Are there other grains, and are they being processed for food?
Uh, So winter rye, people are combining the rye. They ask me, can you combine this? And, you know, I'm sure, as long as you have fall cover. So if you have rye established for 2 weeks and you have a flood, that really holds the soil. So it could be rye, oats, whatever you want. So again, it's a single species rate. Nice thing about a cover crop, any excess nitrogen in the soil, there's two things that are going to happen. It's going to go up or it's going to go down. You're going to have leaching, right? Namely corn producers. Mm-hmm. Putting rye or oats in really helps capture that nitrogen for the next growing season. But some people have called me about combining it. So oats, no, they plow down. Rye, yes, they do combine it.
Yeah,
I got a quick question. I would like to say that, you know, what we do as a government seems like for real estate, retail, manufacturing, just tens of millions of dollars, mm-hmm. billions, trillions, mm-hmm. really, when you look nationally. And we so need local farming crop, mm-hmm. dairy. We don't have it enough. And farming is just not a lucrative job. So what you're doing on a shoestring budget to kind of help keep farmers going with a real shoestring budget compared to what we put into a lot of other things. I've experienced you. I've called you. I've had you over constituents' houses. A lot of times they find out things they may not realize or not want to hear, but you let them know what they need to do to fix a water problem or whatever. I just had a quick question about, you said something about assessment. What you help municipal assessors with evaluating farmland or something? Would you explain that real quick?
Yeah, so what ag value assessment is, like say you're a farmer and you have 100 acres, right? And sometimes the some people are trying to play the assessors. They're not actively farming it. So they call me and they're like, are they farming that or not? So it saves them a trip. Or, you know, when they ask me about a certain soil, you know, why did that change? So certain soil. So there's four primary prime ag soil groups, 1 through 4. And sometimes those soil groups change because of geography, because of flooding. So they're like, well, why did that assessment change? I'm like, well, that feels prone to flooding. So really you think that's a prime ag soil, but how can you grow anything on it when it floods every third year? Thank you.
Just wondering if you have more details about the Meet the Farmer event. Did it happen? It's going to happen.
It happened.
It happened.
And it's going to happen again. And so Herb Litz was at the one in the fall, mm-hmm. last fall, last mm-hmm. October. And some other people were there, like Brett Fox. He donated like 30 pounds of beef, and some other farmers were there. So it was really successful, and I'm telling you, CCE, really, Cornell Cooperative Extension, they worked really hard. I felt bad. I showed up. I helped.
I've never heard of them.
Me either.
Never heard of
them. But is there going to be another one this coming fall?
It's going to be, I think it's going to be October, I think, 18th or 19th.
Okay.
And it's going to be at Cantine Field.
Mm.
In Saugerties, and so Meat, M-E-A-T, diversifying it, where we're going to have fruit growers and the vegetable growers work with us as well.
Great. Can you look for the information?
It's on our website.
Okay.
And it's on CC. They're doing most of the outreach,
okay.
But a couple weeks ago, I contacted 18 farmers. You know, we had a whole list of farms. But since it's their, you know, the apple guys, they're busy right now. The vegetable people, they're planting. The beef producers, they have, you know, so we're going to resume probably end of the month to remind them. But even me, I mean, I was hanging today. So it's just, it's a bad time of year to
busy.
Touch base with people, farmers particularly.
I'm Melanie. I'm the executive director from Cornell Cooperative.
Oh,
lovely. Yeah. Nice to meet you. My job, I guess, now is the marketing part of it.
I didn't bet you.
That was really good.
It's October 22nd, 12 to 3 at Candia Field.
Great. So real quick, so I think something you talked about, something that I think is really important that we understand, and So you know, everybody would, I don't say everybody, but people may assume that soil and water is just farms and in the country, but that's not true, right? You folks work inside municipalities like Kingston and Saugerties, where there's a lot of homes and things like that as well, correct?
Wherever we're needed, city of Kingston, I mean, even Saugerties, right? Foundation drainage, they call us, so, you know, we do house calls. I mean, we're an open door, so whoever walks in the door, we help out.
Good. Thank you. And again, so you have a pretty aggressive agenda for next year, and I'm going to invite you guys back during the budget cycle to give us a presentation. And you know, if you need, you know, we'll talk about increasing the funding again, because as Legislator Maloney pointed out, you guys are unsung heroes in this county. What you do, and you do a lot of work, and you help farmers who are struggling to stay afloat. And you know, we recognize that. This committee recognized it last year, and we absolutely recognize it this year as well. So you know, sharpen your pencils, right, and come back to us with some, you know, good suggestions, and I think you'll get some support in this committee. I'll speak for myself. You'll get at least one vote of support in this committee.
Thank you so much.
All right, yep. Thank you. Any other questions before we go forward? Okay. Thank you. So tonight, we're going to take the resolutions out of order on the agenda. So the first one we're going to do is a resolution number 430 that was presented by Legislator Erner. And I spoke with Legislator Erner earlier this evening, and he is okay with us postponing this until we get some legal eyes on this resolution. Is that okay with you, Lister? Okay. So I'll accept the motion to postpone for a month.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The next one we're going to do is we're going to have the resolution number 331, which is the Ulster County Community College budget for 2023-24. So we've had a presentation by the college to this committee. We've had a public hearing. We had the budget several weeks earlier than we ever did before in the legislature. That gave us ample opportunity to look at it and review it and ask the questions that we had of the college, who has been readily available to us. And we have had a couple of questions. You know, everybody's asking about the signs. You know, that's one of the things that keeps coming up, but that was explained to us pretty well what that's all about. So I think, unless anyone has any other questions, I'll accept the motion for discussion or just to move it.
I'll move it. Quick question.
Yeah, so let's have this motion for discussion.
Yep.
Second?
Second.
Okay, for discussion.
I think Legislator Erner brought up a good point about the wayfinding. I love wayfinding and maps and getting around, but I think in our car culture, we often forget about people without cars. So I think I just want to urge us all to remember the pedestrians and bicyclists and improving our bus services. I'm not sure how lengthy the discussions became after Legislator Erner brought it up, but I just want to bring it up.
No, thank you. And it is also primarily how our students who are ambulatory on campus will move around campus and find things. So they are 9, they will be in kiosks and able to move, just so we can update, not have a big static pillar in the middle of the class. But yeah, it's good.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll accept the motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate it.
Okay, the third resolution we're going to do is 379, which is reappointing member and appointing alternate member to the Ulster County Planning Board for the town of Lloyd.
Make the motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. Resolution number 380. Which is
actually taking 330 last?
Yes, we're taking 330 last. We're doing it on purpose so we can discuss it thoroughly. Okay? Yep. Resolution 380, authorizing inclusion of additional lands in Ag District within the Ulster County as recommended by the Ulster County Ag and Farmland Protection Board, Department of Planning.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. And then we're going to talk about resolution number 381. Which is authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to accept grants for Golden Hill Renewable Energy Project, amending the 2023 Ulster County Budget, Department of Planning. Okay, that's a mouthful. All right, so on 381, is there any discussion? Okay, I'll accept the motion to approve.
Oh, one of the things, one of the reasons that we put this resolution in, I'm sorry, if I may.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
One of the reasons we put this resolution in was to sort of engender a discussion and One of the things we're missing here is the actual contract. I don't have the contract from the state is not here yet, so your backup information. And this goes with Resolution 382, which is also working through a number of agreements that we have to make with respect to Penrose Corporation or the developer on Golden Hill to essentially effectuate the grant. So in the other committees, this has been postponed. And we would not object to a postponement at this time and take them all up again in the August meeting. And then what we're hoping to do is to bring Penrose in, at least in ways and means, to essentially discuss what those other agreements are. We did give you, for the Penrose agreement, we did give you an 11-page discussion of how those agreements would work and what they're at. So we have no objection if the committee wants to postpone this a month, mainly because of the lack of the contract. And this is a contract essentially that one of the grant source here, it's one of the first times that they've actually funded grants relative to affordable housing. So it's taken us a bit of a slog to get through the contracting language at the state level. And I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking about postponing both 381 and 382?
382, okay. But what we really want to make sure is that as we move through this, it becomes much more closer to design issues associated with the Penrose project.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to finalize design, we really need to move this in August. So one of the reasons we put it out was to make sure that we could address all your questions ahead of time so we didn't find ourselves in a situation in August where we would be looking at another postponement because we didn't have answers to the questions that were being
raised in other committees, right? Yeah. But so
there were a lot of questions in energy and environment. Whatever we're getting, we could always pass along to economic development as well. We had a pretty lengthy discussion. And this could end up becoming the Family Woodstock project, right? Even according to the contract.
It's who the developer
right now
is.
It's blank,
yeah.
And we may not even be awarding this money to Penrose. We may be awarding it to Family Woodstock, depending on who ends up technically owning it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Yeah, so that's a good idea. So just copy, if you could have Vicki copy.
Yeah, anything, what my plan was essentially to any information and questions that I got from any committee, I would circulate through back to the legislative staff to all the committees. It has to be circulated to all the committees.
Okay.
But I urge everyone to take a close look at the agreement, the various agreements. There's four. Power purchase agreement, there's an agreement for essentially maintenance, there's an agreement for ownership, there's an environmental easement on the site as well. Take a look at those, and if you have any, you know, pressing things that say we're really concerned about this, let's get those answered. That I don't want to find myself. I don't think we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where we're holding up an application for funding and design by not having this finalized.
Yeah.
So, Chair, can I make a motion to
line?
Yeah.
Block 381, 382?
Mine, yeah, 381. 381.
Okay.
Second.
All right, all those in favor of the block?
Aye.
Aye. And somebody want to make a...
I'll make a motion to postpone this for 1 month.
Okay, great. Second. Mr. Sperry, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, great. Thank you. So that leaves us at Resolution 330. So Resolution 330 is dedicating funding to housing affordability, establishing a policy for its use, and authorizing the release of a Notice of Funding Availability, NOFA, for 2023 Department of Planning.
I'll move it.
Yeah. So Legislator Maloney and Criswell. Okay, great. discussion?
So we do have a presentation.
If the committee wants to see it, do you guys want to see this now, or do you want to wait? One of the problems that I have, and I just want to be right up front with this, I'm going to recommend that we postpone this, and I'm going to tell you why. Well, because we have no minority representation at the meeting tonight. And I spoke to Legislator Litz today, and he said he wasn't ready to go forward with it. And out of respect to the vice chair of the committee, I think it would be, you know, wise to have him here for at least him and Legislator Corcoran, obviously, for any presentation we got. No one notified me or the clerk of this committee that anybody wanted to give us a presentation tonight. And had you done that, you know, I probably would have said, well, let's wait till everybody's here. As a matter of fact, I know I would have said that.
And give members that aren't even on the committee the chance to come and see a presentation on something that's working on the floor. You give us a rundown.
I just want to, you know, I'll speak to the process. I just will start by saying, you know, I've been trying to pass housing legislation in this body for almost 4 years now, and it has been one of the toughest headwinds that I've ever faced in my professional life. And clearly that's going to continue tonight. This proposal, though, unlike any of the other legislation I brought forward on housing during my two terms in this body, is the product of a very, very thorough collaboration with the county executive. And I want to give their team, Dennis and Kai in particular, great acknowledgement on the work that they did to flesh out a very, very thorough policy that every member of this committee has had for 2 months now. And we held a special meeting of the Housing Committee specifically for a presentation on this, and I believe that information was shared with the full body. I know that there were concerns about forthcoming amendments when it was introduced last month. Now there are concerns about not having seen a presentation that's available tonight. Definitely there are clearly some headwinds on passing housing legislation in this county, but I do want to give major credit to the county executive's team for putting together a very, very thorough policy. And to the extent that folks do have questions, I would encourage them to be asked tonight so that a month from now we can't say that we never asked the questions.
Yeah. So I just want to make a comment back to what Legislator Usciutolta said. I don't think there's any resistance to establishing housing policy, especially from me personally. I would speak for anyone other than myself. I just say this, that I think the right housing policy is what's important, and allocating the correct amount of funds in unsure financial times is very important to me as a member of the legislative body overall, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, and knowing what I know and knowing what most legislators know now about Elizabeth Manor, for example, that was projected to us to be $1 million and is now projected to be well over $5 million, right? Where with no established way of funding it. So we have $4 million plus that we have to pull out of our butts to get that place open and running, right? And who knows when it'll be there. We don't even know if it's structurally sound enough to actually do what we want to do there at this point, right? So you can understand the reluctance to dedicate $15 million to projects that we don't even know exist, right? And I'm going to ask this, maybe Planner Doyle knows this, but when is the last time somebody has come to the county and said, we will build this housing project if you give us $300,000 as a grant? Has that ever happened? Is there anybody in the queue doing that right now?
We have a number of projects that are looking for local support, and the example I would give you is low-income housing tax credit funded projects have a minimum amount of requirements for local support that boosts them up in the scoring process. Mm-hmm. And the most recent example of that has been the decision to use ARPA funds to essentially provide funding for the geothermal work for Silver Gardens in Lloyd.
Yeah.
You essentially basically pledged those funds. As part of pledging those funds, in the last go around for 9% low income tax credits, the project was awarded funding. So there's 50 some units of senior housing that is now funded in Lloyd relative to the work that you folks did with respect to that. And I want to introduce Kylord Farmer from the county planning department's team. He's a senior planner. Kai does all of our housing work, and he comes to us from California, where he worked in housing and on climate change work. He is a Ulster County native, and his parents still live in Ulster County. And Kai's done a lot of this work, and Kai can tell you where the success of these kinds of programs have been in other counties. So Kai, why don't you address that?
Sure. Yeah. So as Legislator Uchitel mentioned, we've done a lot of research to get to this point on designing what a housing trust fund would look like. We talked extensively with Tompkins County, which has the most successful model of a housing trust fund in New York State. I believe it's close to $7 million over the past 10 years, funding close to 900 affordable housing units. So in a lot of ways, this framework and this design is based off of Tompkins County model. We've also talked to Dutchess County, with recently created a housing trust fund, as well as Westchester County, both with, you know, successful track record there. I can provide a lot more information, but you know, we're not inventing anything new here. I think one thing that we did learn was that to attract affordable housing developers, we learned that there needs to be a formal and a transparent process so that developers know, and potential landowners know as well, that there's a formal, transparent process that they can apply for to receive funding for a project. So just to answer your question, it may be that there are projects, and we've definitely heard about individual projects. The Habitat for Humanity project in Town of Saugerties is one that comes to mind. So there are projects, they just don't necessarily know, and because there isn't a formal process to apply for that funding right now. And I think the other thing too is, by creating a framework, we can help develop and steer the best types of projects for the county, rather than having individual projects come in one at a time and not really assess them across the board.
So Legislator Maloney, I'm going to ask the committee folks to get an opportunity. Legislator Maloney, then Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, a lot of this comes down to, if not more, right? I mean, that's, I just heard $700,000 to a Highland senior housing that resulted in 50 units. You do the math. We just created 50 units, $14,000 a piece. It sounds wonderful. That's what Tompkins County does all the
time. That's right.
The problem is, you can go back to planning and zoning board meetings in Highland, where the owner of that private facility was talking about that geothermal heating system a year or two before they even asked us for it. So is that 50 unit very lucrative senior housing complex for the owner happening because we gave them a heating system? No, it was happening anyways. And that's the concern, that we're going to take $15 million. I mean, Saugerties right now, where I come from, has like literally five projects going right now where they're building in different major housing complexes of all types. So, and that's happening all around the county. So, of course, we're going to have a lot of handouts. We're going to be able to do what Tompkins County did, which sounds great, and do that kind of math, which doesn't make any sense, because $14,000 a unit is ridiculous. That's not what ended up happening over at Highland. We're not, as a government, responsible for 50 units because of the $700,000 we put in. And it's arguable, but it's a conversation to have, whether that would be happening even without us doing that. But I said when we did that, it's Pandora's box, and if we go down that road, take lump sums of money, and then just let developers ultimately put their hand out, that's where it's going to be very important for me to hear the criteria. How are we going to tangibly go back and figure out whether we were the reason for that, and where so many people are out there building these types of facilities and getting state and federal grants and tax credits, which also, I'll remind you, means that it turns into a mandated federal and state lottery. So we're talking about the housing crisis in Ulster County with a major waiting list, and then we're going to be further subsidizing now with county dollars, ultimately developers that would probably be doing the project anyways, and then ends up being a lottery for the entire nation or state. So we don't even help our housing crisis. You could actually make the argument you're worsening the problem. So this all sounds good, but the devil's going to be in the details, and there's nothing I've seen from Tompkins County that makes me feel real good about jumping in quick and trying to do quickly what they have, when we already have
five or six capital projects going in the county, many of which have to do with housing, that we are behind and over budget on already. That's my thought.
I'd love to defer to members of the committee, but I'm happy to speak.
Oh, yeah, so with Peter, you're up next.
If somebody wants to answer any of Joe's questions, I'm happy to wait. Or I have a question.
A lot of more observation.
Yeah. Okay, so the question I had was about amounts of money distributed per year, because we were talking about a $15 million fund. But then I tried to really go and do a deep dive in the documents you sent, and I saw it was a $3 million distribution in 2023. So is there caps on distributions per year? And then ultimately, how is that fund refurbished? And like, what's that process of in and out for large sums?
One of the other things that we learned is that the success of these types of funds are longevity. And we wanted to be careful that when we set this up, that we could at least do about 5 years of funding and show our success with respect to that. And so it's set up to essentially create an assigned fund balance, and everybody needs to understand what an assigned fund balance means. It means it's assigned for a specific purpose by the legislature. It's not locked in a box, so the legislature can change the way how it's assigned, but it rolls from year to year. It doesn't disappear on an annualized basis. So it's not quite like your tax stabilization fund, where it's in a locked box. You can only use it for specific purposes. The legislature at any point in time can change those purposes. So that's the first thing we wanted to try to do, is make sure that we understood that if we put it in assigned fund balance, that the legislature did have flexibility over time to change it if it decided. The second thing was to sort of take a look at what's an appropriate amount of money that we can use on an annualized basis that we think we can get out the door. And one of the reasons, the way the language is carefully written in the resolution, that basically says the legislature anticipates making available. It doesn't say it's going to be made available, but what that allows us to do is, as part of the NOFA, which is a Notice of Funding Availability, and you've all seen these from state agencies and others and government and at the federal level, what we're able to do is set up a program, a Notice of Funding Availability, that says, here's what we're trying to fund, right? We gave you the background for that program is in your packet, so you have what we're talking about and what we're going to fund and the levels of funding that are out there. We would then take those in with a review committee. So there's a housing review committee that's established. The review committee would make recommendations to the legislature. The legislature would make the final decision in terms of the funding that's awarded. So think of it like a version of ARPA. If you can think of how you did ARPA, particularly like look at your infrastructure, how you did your infrastructure funds, where you put out, this is what we're doing, you got them in, you reviewed them, you took them back to the committee made the recommendation to the other committee, the legislature finally decided whether or not it was going to fund and how much it was going to fund. Think of that as it relates to housing, and then think of the ARPA bucket of money as what we would have in an assigned fund balance. If that works for you, then you can understand how we structured this and put this together. The difference here is there's an outside committee that's going to make the recommendations back to the legislature, and we looked at how that committee should be made up. We can have all kinds of discussions about the makeup of that committee, but one of the things that has come out is that we believe that we need housing people that understand housing, understand real estate pro formas, understand how these things work, and I think that gave us some comfort level. In addition, the conversations we've had with Westchester, the conversations we've had with Dutchess County, the conversations we've had with Tompkins County gave us some comfort levels that we were on the right track. The other thing I would say is, it seems disingenuous to pass a resolution that and a local law that basically says that housing is now a county purpose and not fund any housing. Because you've got concerns about giving money to rich people or something, not looking at essentially the fact that this is who you're helping. You're giving housing to people that are poor.
Yeah.
And I think those are the things that you have to separate yourself out from. And I don't know how to do that well, because I understand that there's that sense that what are we doing and why are we doing it? But if we keep an eye on why we're doing it, is the person at the end of the game who's living in that unit, mm-hmm. and not how that unit got here, mm-hmm. I think you're in a lot better place to talk about it and to discuss it.
Legislator Hewitt?
This is the same presentation Jen did at the special meeting. Thank you. I feel like, to your point, your last point, $15 million is a drop in the bucket if we're going to make a difference, especially what we're learning with Elizabeth Manor. And I like your comparison to ARPA, because I've told Vice Chair Criswell, to me it seems like a great model to really vet projects, think them through, go from committee, sometimes to the floor, back to committee. And so I'm highly supportive of the fund. But
EDA is not involved, is it?
But I agree with Legislator Maloney, because often in big money, all the people who figure out how to make their profits often get their smile. So I think we could use our best value procurement in this case to try to prioritize nonprofit-only contracts, because then we could see who's getting paid and what the director gets paid. There's more open books, and then and their mission, because they have to have a mission if they're a nonprofit. And then they
can
care about our purpose.
Okay.
I was actually impressed with what I felt like was really out-of-the-box thinking with this. I saw such a wide variety of possibilities for funding. So it's not just developers, for-profit developers, or nonprofits. It's everything into these little micro tiny houses or accessory dwellings. So it has a really, really broad approach to... Helping get this housing situated, and also the different types of housing that we're talking about. It really is the whole span of what we're talking about: emergency housing, affordable housing, permanent dwellings. You know, I thought it was a very comprehensive.
Mr. Hugh, go ahead.
Yeah. Just to add to that, I got a price for a tiny house recently because my kids are in college. I thought we can have a little empty nest cottage. Mm. We got a price for $350,000 for a tiny
two.
So we're not building that. These costs can spiral out of control. But if it's a tiny house or an ADU, especially with the competition that we had, we can find ways to minimize cost on the thing.
Kai, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that point, too. The way that we've set this up, there are a lot of categories that could potentially be funded. But the idea here is that we get... the Housing Policy and Oversight Committee together, get the experts to understand exactly where the market's at, and then you've got this laundry list of the types of projects, but the NOFA that goes out every year is designed for prioritizing what is needed in the housing market right now. Mm-hmm. So if emergency housing is needed this year, $3 million specifically for emergency housing. If it's tiny homes, hopefully not that pricey, then that can be the priority. If it's a multifamily project that is in the works, we can prioritize that as well. And then there's another category in there too, to give small grants to essentially catalyze ways to bring down the cost of development, so kind of pilot projects for new ways of development that would bring down...
I'll be all for that.
Yeah, bring down the cost of development. And I guess the other point I'll make too is that the difference between, say, like HCR, a state financing source, and a local financing source is that we're on the ground, we understand the projects that are going on. And with our conversations with HCR, what they said was really great about housing trust funds is that with the amount of money that we can provide, we are filling the gap for smaller contractors and smaller developers who can't compete at the state or federal level for these bigger projects, but the 10, 15, you know, even 8-unit projects mm-hmm. that don't make sense for a bigger developer to go after, but is probably more appropriately sized for a lot of places in Ulster County. There isn't a lot of funding sources
right.
out there for them. So that's it's filling a pretty important gap for those smaller local development companies.
What's that, Mullen?
I just think we got to be careful. You know, we go down the same road when we think we're going to create jobs. When you look at the amount of money we've given out, the what we've handcuffed our school districts with, and what we end up with, it hasn't happened. You have to be, you have to know your role in government on the county level. It's just, you know, we're going to end up, and we don't know what we're doing. We're not going to put the experts. We have five or six capital projects that are absolutely out of control right now. We have people from finance overseeing capital projects. It makes no sense. We don't know what we're doing. And now we're going to jump into this with a couple of bucks, and we're going to wait for people to come to us and say, I'm going to build something over here, and if you give me money, I'll do it. And only that's the only way it's going to happen, and all too often it doesn't. And we need to have a real conversation about housing, and I really believe we need houses, not housing. You know, if we think we're going to build a bunch of apartment complex and fix our problem, first of all, I already explained, we got people coming from all over, especially as we build these apartment complexes, because no one's building these major apartment complexes, especially affordable or senior, without getting these tax credits that require a lottery. But we cannot become a city here. Ulster County has to understand that we're in between two cities that we keep going. Right? Where do they incarcerate? Where do they get their food? Where do they get their electricity? We're about to put a big line down the Hudson River. What do we do with our solid waste? New York City and cities in general are completely unsustainable. They're sustained by the areas around them. So what is our plan? How much non-taxable entities can we handle? Have we taken a look at how many, you know, you talk about not-for-profits wanting to get into housing. What are our school districts going to do? There's so many questions here, and we're going to take a couple million bucks and think we're going to solve a problem. We're gonna give a couple of million dollars away, is what we're gonna end up doing, I fear.
So, hey, the committee's done, so you're up, and I think Phil, you're up next.
I'll let Phil go first.
I mean, the last point by Legislator Malone is very interesting. The whole way that we fund our county government is actually on sales tax and property tax, basically. And reckoning with that is probably a subject for a whole legislature to spend a whole term on, and that would be quite a transformation, maybe a necessary one. But as for this matter here, the reason this matter is before this committee, I believe, is because of the planning process, and we have here the planning head and the housing planner who are intimately involved in the creation of this proposal, and I hear them giving us their hearty endorsement. I certainly have shared in my year and a half now my concerns over subsidizing the wealthy in terms of housing projects, and I've certainly shared my concerns around lack of transparency and accountability. The reason I think this is different is that the variety of options that we have is quite large, and we will always have a choice. It will always come back to this. There's a committee that's going to be established that makes recommendations, and the legislature will ultimately always get to decide. So I think that covers the accountability part, the variety of options. You can have a community-owned or resident-owned project funded by this, as well as a private for-profit developer-owned project. Maybe you can't quite do public housing. That's another conversation. But it is all going to be low-income housing. And that's what our people are suffering from a lack of, especially because we have not been able to do anything to prevent them from losing their housing. That's increasingly affecting people of moderate incomes, too, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that the committee will consider that and advancing it tonight for those reasons. Thank you.
You ready now, Eve?
Yeah, well, okay. I have a lot of respect for the committee process, so I want to make sure that everyone's questions were out there and not just devolve into any back and forth, so I appreciate that. I'm not surprised that projects like Elizabeth Manor are being brought up right now. I am surprised that they're being brought up as a justification for not taking a different course. This is a different course. This is not the county DPW doing estimates and you know, refurbishing an old home. The conversation we're having about Elizabeth Manor internally right now is very much like this would never fly in the private sector. So it seems like there's a lot of respect for the way that the private sector does things, and yet I'm hearing a lot of pushback, not from everybody, but from a couple people, about
relying on the private sector here, but we know that if we came forward with a proposal for the public sector to create housing, then there would be, you know, twice as much pushback in other ways. So this is a path forward working with the tools that we have, and it's fundamentally a different process than what we have today. Right now, with Elizabeth Manor where it is, if we were to pull the plug on that, we're basically going to put the ball back in the county executive's court to select a different site or to say we're not going to do this project, this is no longer a you know, program that we want to move forward with. And that is not something that's going to be transparent, that is not going to be a process that's not going to be a process at all. It's going to be basically an initiative that comes before us in a way that's already you know, very well established, and it sounds like there's a discomfort level with that. This is a fundamentally different process, and I would encourage everyone to really read the details, read the backup. There's a lot of very, very specific details here. These details are intended to address the concerns that are being brought today. These details are intended to address the concerns that have been brought up again as reasons not to move forward with a variety of housing legislation that's been before this body. So I don't think there's anybody here that looks out there and says, yes, this is going well. Yes, we have enough housing. Yes, everyone can stay in their home. Yes, we have what we need. We all agree that we need to change course. I've been listening to objections to housing legislation for almost 4 years now. This proposal is intended to address as many of those objections as it possibly can, but it's not going to be perfect. We have to do something. So please, if we postpone tonight, I understand that. Use the time to learn about the proposal. Use the time to ask questions. Some of us have been working on this for a really, really long time, and the reason isn't because it's some pet project for us or some point of pride to see this passed. Is because every day we get calls from constituents that are being evicted. Every day we get calls from people that have nowhere to live, and we need to do something. And we've been trying to do something, and never have we had a more robust proposal than what we have before us today. And I really want to applaud the county executive's team for putting this together.
So I'll just, anybody else have any comments at this point? So the one thing that I'll say is that Planner Doyle talked about this being an assigned fund versus a reserve fund. I'd rather see a reserve fund. I'd rather see that $15 million go in a reserve fund, allocated $3 million a year for 5 years. I would much rather see that than an assigned fund, because that way we know all $15 million over the course of 5 years would be going towards housing initiatives. As an assigned fund, this legislature would never take it out of the budget, but who knows what the next legislature might do, or the one after that, or an executive budget that says we can no longer afford to fund this, right, as an assigned fund. I'm an advocate for reserve funds. I always have been, I always will be. And I would, you know, much rather see, you know, this put in a reserve fund for housing, right? Because we, you know, nobody is arguing, I am not arguing anyway, with the merit of this program or the proposal. I think it's wonderful. I really do. Okay? And I think it's something that's long overdue, where we have an opportunity to help people who really want to come in here and build the type of housing that we need in the county. Actually, I think we need all levels of housing. It's not just low-income housing, right? And as we build bigger houses, it opens up the ones beneath it, right, as it goes, right? It's not the optimum way to do it, but it is absolutely what happens, right? So, you know, for me...
Trickle down.
Yeah, it does trickle down. It does. It does. It does actually do that, right? And, you know, when you people, like, I'll give myself an example. I'm going to be 65 years old in a few months, right? I have a house. I don't want to keep a house at 65. So I'd rather live in a nice condo somewhere, right? So sell my house. That offers it up to a middle-income family who can buy it. It's not a great house. It's a relatively small house. Very affordable. Working-class family could easily afford it, right? And so that's where I say, yes, it does trickle down a little bit. So for me, you know, personally, you know, that's a big number, knowing what we know, coming back from the comptroller's office. The comptroller sits here and tells us month after month that the state comptroller is warning the counties to be careful with what they're allocating for sales tax, because sales tax is going down, and it continues to go down. And we're right now, as if I'm not misunderstanding the last report, we're like $3 million down from what we have in our budget for this time this year, right? So, you know, that's a concern of mine. You know, we have responsibility to do what we can to provide housing. We also have a responsibility to make sure that we're protecting the taxpayers and not and it's not the right word, but you're frivolously spending this money. I know it's not frivolous, but I'm just saying, you know, we should really be very cautious for the next legislators coming behind us. You know, I'm not going to be here, right? but I'm worried, quite honestly, for those of you that are going to be here, on what these next budgets have been. I've been through that, where we've had to cut the budget in the middle of a budget, where there were dozens of proposed layoffs because the economy turned just like that, bang, right? And that happened, and I was in this legislature when it happened, and I kind of smell that right now, honestly. And with the signals coming from Albany on the sales tax decreases, that worries me as a municipality, because we are very limited on how we can raise our revenue. And sales tax is our number one revenue generator, right? So if that starts going down, to me, that's a red flag fiscally for legislators. And so if you want to take that, we have $53 million fund balance. If we want to lock up $15 million of that now for 5 years to dedicate to housing, I'm okay with that. But keeping it as assigned, I worry about that.
Just to clarify, you want it locked up or not locked up?
I want it locked up. If you're going to put that kind of money
in
there...
You think there's a recession coming?
Well, that's right, because if we're going to do this, if we're dedicated... Because I don't disagree with your points, Abe, or anyone, or the executive's mission here. I don't disagree with that. But if you're going to dedicate, and we're going to be... And by the way, do we have to refund this annually?
I believe it has to be included in the budget.
And how much...
The resolution is written is the county executive would at budget time propose a figure to be released for the next year. That's the way it's written. So within the budget coming forward, they would say, we think you should release $3 million, $2 million.
Yeah.
So it would be, in other words, the current language in the resolution anticipates.
Mm-hmm.
We would basically say, we think that the county should think about releasing X amount of millions of dollars for the next year. That allows, understand what we're trying to do here. When we go out for a notice of funding availability, giving those people that are applying for funds, they want to know how much money you have available and where and what your priorities are associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do you do when that's
on an annualized basis?
Yeah.
You can change your amount of funding on an annualized basis.
Right.
You can change what you want to fund.
And the $15 million goes away, then what do we do? If we have this as a policy that's flying high, everybody's using it, right? And the executive says, look, we have $10 million requests next year. We need $10 million next year. Then the money's gone. Then what do we do?
Well, a couple of things, and one of the things that we've explored is essentially looking at having the towns participate, having philanthropy participate, having those folks that impact our housing needs participate. That could be working with the IDA, looking at how pilots are structured. It could be looking at other things other industries that work in here that basically participate in dealing with housing needs, and we could ask them for contributions. It also could be looking at mortgage tax, and it could be looking at the increase in room tax. You start thinking about that, and it's attributed to short. A lot of it is attributed to short-term rentals, which impact our housing costs and housing availability. Then you can start to think about moving some of that into help mm-hmm. housing costs and housing availability. So we have thought that through. The room tax stuff. So you can start thinking about ways that you can continue to fund it.
I like this as an assigned fund rather than as a restricted fund, because I think it gives us the opportunity to assess the success of the program and to say, oh, you know what, this is really not working at all, and then we can just move those monies, or this is working so well, we need to think about increasing it. I just feel like it gives us a lot more flexibility rather than locking ourselves into something that we just don't know how it's going to work. And so I prefer that, personally.
Quickly, just one thing Dan said. With regards to the IDA, really, Industrial Development Agency, it's manufacturing industrial jobs. It's literally illegal, according to the state enabling legislation, for housing to even be given. IDA payments, it's not there for housing. They give away school taxes as one of their main chips. And I think that leads me into making that point again, that we have to think about, as we subsidize housing, we should not be subsidizing projects that are not going to pay their school taxes. You're talking about $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a kid. We handcuff our schools. We're going to need a lot more affordable housing, because education is the great equalizer.
and we need to educate our kids. It's always about our kids. And we are now starting to subsidize projects, and we're talking about the IDA in a way that was never meant to be talked. It's happening more and more. I did IDA interviews. People are coming in saying we need housing. That made me scared because it's not what the IDA is there for. But we are now, Penrose is an example, we are subsidizing housing projects that are not going to pay their school taxes. And then you take 30, 40, 50 kids and you dump them on a school district that's already completely understaffed and underfunded, and now you've really got a problem. And you create big, big problems while trying to fix another problem. The government's got to be aware of that. And part of this legislation, if it gets passed, I really think it should have something in there about not subsidizing and not getting involved in housing projects that are not going to pay their school taxes. We cannot do that. We have to get away from that. It's a huge problem. Part of the housing problem issues we have, part of the cost issue, are our taxes. And as we get more and more into housing and subsidize it, we have to make sure these developers are paying their school taxes. It's a disaster waiting to happen, and we're seeing it already.
Let's hear Sperry. Go ahead.
I just want to say, like, I appreciate everybody's comments tonight, and I think that it was a really good conversation. Comprehensively, there was a lot of really good points brought up, but the truth of the matter is we don't have the votes here tonight to move this forward, I don't think. We need 4 votes to move it forward.
Yeah, it would probably be wise to postpone it tonight.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, because quite honestly, you do need for it to go forward, and as I said, the minority members of the committee aren't here. I didn't know that Herb wasn't going to be here. I didn't know that till 4:30 this afternoon when I spoke to him, and he told me he's in Maine. I said, better hurry up. So I think, you know, it would be prudent, and, you know, Abe, you know, thank you very much. Dennis, thank you very much. I'm going to absolutely make sure that this gets distributed to our committee, you know, and we see it, and then I'll consider a special committee meeting, you know, maybe in the next, well, I'm going away, so maybe 3 weeks, I don't know. You know, it's vacation time, so it's very difficult to schedule, yeah.
For me,
yeah,
the idea that we differ in terms of what we're doing and how to accomplish it, that's something that everyone should respect. But the idea that we're not going to move things forward in the future because we still have questions, that's something I think we need to work on together so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we're being asked to consider something and we think we've informed you appropriately and you don't think we did. So I urge everyone, if there are specific questions that you have, please ask them. We will do our absolute darndest to make sure that you get answers to those questions.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead, let's hear you.
I'm not sure if this is legal or possible, but have you heard of a conference where the legislators can spend a whole weekend learning about an issue like housing? Because this is a deep issue, I agree with Legislator Erner. Something like property tax came from the hot tax in Africa because England was trying to afford it. Tribes that are thousands of years old and resilient and able to work together, they wanted them to earn pounds, so they forced them to pay property taxes. It was called a hut tax at the time. Mm-hmm. But that's something that I think we can all learn about as a legislature to just advance the conversation on housing. Mm-hmm. Do you know if there's ever been a conference?
I am not aware. I don't know. Maybe Dennis has been around. He was here when the building was built.
I will absolutely volunteer to put a conference together if the legislature would like to attend. We would get experts to come in, not ourselves, experts to come in to talk to you about how the tax situation works, because it works a little bit differently. Then you would think we get people from HCR come down and talk to you about what a real estate pro forma looks like in a real property in a low income tax. We can explain to you why people are paying taxes on the basis that they pay taxes to school districts because of the amount of money they collect in rent because their rents are actually fixed. We can have a conversation about the way these things are done at the local level in terms of approvals and the difficulties associated with that. And we can definitely have a conversation that absent a public policy and a sense that you're willing to invest in moving things forward, this situation doesn't change. Right? And I think that's the biggest fear in my mind. I think the biggest fear in the people that are out there looking for housing, I think the biggest fear is that public policy has to drive what we're doing here. And for me, there are little things that we can do, and there are bigger things that we can do. But at least we need to basically say we're going to do something. And I will say to you that we do have a Housing Smart Communities program. We have how many signed up?
12.
We have 12 out of the 23 towns and villages signed up to be Housing Smart Communities. We're working with them to essentially amend their zoning statutes. We're getting inclusionary zoning so that you have to have a minimum portion of your projects have to be affordable. We're working on changing the way things get approved. I talked to people and consultants from the state of New Jersey, and they basically say, if you're in the state of New Jersey and you want to build a project, I will guarantee you that 20% of that project will be affordable at 80% or below. And they're target numbers. And if it's a small project, say you're only building 5 units, you get to pay essentially a portion of that project gets to pay into an escrow fund, which is then used to subsidize larger projects. New York State is just archaic when it comes to trying to provide for housing. You look at what Massachusetts does, what New Jersey does, what Connecticut does, there's a different world out here. Unfortunately, in New York State, it's come down to the locals to make those kinds of changes.
Real quick, I will say, if it's got something in there that mandates school taxes being paid at full assessed value, you will have my vote. If you don't, I probably won't support it.
Appreciate
but
that.
For me, it has a lot to do with these school taxes.
If I may, I appreciate Legislator Maloney's
caring about kids.
No, because it's different.
Willingness to negotiate.
Yeah, and understand something. The property tax is based on the value of a building. There are other kinds of taxes that are not based on a value of a building. There are, for example, the example I would give you, some real estate people are real estate facilities are based on the rents associated with the real estate that's there.
Right. The Section 8, whatever you call it now, they are valued differently. I'm not talking about that.
But what ends up happening is because of the value of the building associated with an affordable housing project, the income that's generated is not generated based on the value of the building. It's generated on rents that are controlled. So they can't pay the taxes associated with the normal full assessed value. They can pay a value assessed on the income, which is provided for in the real property tax law, or they can pay a value based on pilots, which is a payment in lieu of taxes. The reason that they go...
I understand what you're saying. I'm talking about the pilot aspect of it.
The reason that they go to pilots, the reason that they go to pilots is the lenders are essentially looking for a means to ensure that the project is affordable over time. And the pilot does that. You can write a pilot. The difficulty that they have is that they don't want to be negotiating with the assessor on an annual basis in terms of what their income is. I will tell you that assessors, when you talk to them, don't want to be in that negotiation either, because they're afraid that the developer will essentially tack on costs to the project to show that they don't make any money, and therefore they don't have to pay any taxes because they have no income. So it works both ways. It's not just a one-way street. It does work both ways.
I'm talking about the there's built-in state-mandated parameters.
That's correct.
According to what kind of unit it is, and that allows for a lower assessment to begin with, but there's still a base assessed.
I am
school tax.
Legislator,
you go beyond that, I'm not giving money to
you. I'm more than willing to sit down to you and explain to you, and if not me, I'll bring people in to explain to you how pilots work.
You're
and how...
You're talking about banks, not what these people wanting not to put skin in the games and getting loans from banks guaranteed.
It's literally the ability to pay. It has nothing to do with... It's literally the ability to pay because their rents are controlled. I mean, they're charging rents on a unit that's worth $300,000. They're charging rents at $900 a pop because they're down helping people with 30% of income. So they get down to $600 for a month. they can't pay the school taxes on that.
There's no money.
They're already assessed much lower. I'll sit down and talk to you.
Yeah. More than willing to do this. We should run this
and
out.
There's a million apartment complexes right here, around here, that are paying what I'm talking about paying. Going beyond that, like Penrose, is something I don't want to be involved in.
So
they've gone beyond. You've helped them.
Okay, so Legislator Hewitt had his hand up, and I think Legislator Sperry, and after that, go ahead.
No, he's going to advocate on my behalf.
I just wanted to mention, if you put together a little conference, I'd love to help.
Okay.
Agreed.
Only if I get a micro
All right. So, Abe, thank you. Dennis, thank you. Kai, thank you very much. Yep, and appreciate it. And unfortunately, I wish those guys were here. You know, they maybe it would have passed tonight. I don't know. I will take you up on making sure that I dig as deep as I need to and come to a fair understanding of it, which is the same commitment I gave to the executive, right? And I will do that.
I just wanted to add, since we're still in session,
yes.
The reason I'd like to help is to think things through, like stewarding land in common and the way Native tribes handled land, and not be a housing conference about how to make more housing and get rich off housing. Nothing like that. Try to decolonize housing through a conference of understanding.
Okay. All right, so with that, we have no other resolutions. Is there any other new business that anyone on the committee would like to discuss this evening? Anyone from the executive's office, any new business? Okay.
Real quick, any updates on the Rail Explorers RFP?
We would expect it out probably either end of this month or mid-month.
And I ask that it gets before you put it out, can you show us what you have that's going out?
What we had talked to the committee about, and I'll talk,
right?
You're good. Everybody agree to is that if there's any concerns relative to what should be in that, then you can provide them to us.
I just think it's completely appropriate for us.
Wait, have we voted out?
I thought you were just going to take one action.
We could just take no action, which is equivalent.
We've had this discussion, and you know how this works. As long as I'm unable to release it, then I won't release it.
You guys
the
okay?
I have specific concerns that you want to see addressed in the RFP.
I just got to take care of some business with the committee first. So we didn't vote to postpone on that. So we have a couple of options. We can take no action on it, or take a vote to postpone it for 30 days.
What would you prefer?
I don't know if there's a difference between the two.
If we postpone for 3 months, Abe can
one month.
If we Abe could potentially force a vote, if
you
no action
for
doesn't
a month,
3 months
times in a row,
three months in a row, right?
It
starts
a clock.
I would say postpone it.
Okay,
I mean,
this would be your second postponement.
Would be the second postponement. So if we don't, if we vote to postpone in August, then you could force us to vote it out in September.
Yeah, with a petition to discharge.
No, just force us to vote. We can't postpone it 4 months in a row. And I don't think we will, by the way. You know. So, by the way, as a point of reference, has any other committee passed this yet?
Yeah, the Housing Committee.
The Housing Committee
has passed it. Ways and Means received. The Housing Committee received the presentation. Ways and Means received the presentation. I think you were there. The Housing Committee passed it. It's been postponed here, and I don't know if Ways and Means postponed or took no action.
Yeah, I think they postponed.
Yeah.
But so they're the only three committees that have to pass it, correct?
Yes, only those three committees.
Only those three, which is 75% of the legislature. But yeah, so that's part of the problem too. I think is a lot of times these resolutions go through so many committees that they have different points of view.
I think it's fair to say when it comes to housing legislation is a great example of. Exposing some of the process opportunities for improving in future legislative sessions.
Right, you guys every year have an opportunity to fix that. Every year, the new legislature has opportunity to fix that. Anyway, so then we'll take no, we'll postpone this. I'll accept the motion to postpone for a month. Seconded by Legislator Sperry.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor? Aye, Joe.
I'm not.
In favor of postpone?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm a no.
You're a no?
You left the impression.
All right, well,
that's correct.
1, 2, 3, 4, that's enough.
One.
Yeah.
that, and I feel like it's moving. So.
No, I hear you. Hey, everybody gets a vote. That's what I love about the legislature. Okay, so with that, no any old business? Okay, so I want to make a motion for adjournment.
Motion.
All right, second. Second, if you disapprove of postponement?
Yeah.
And then we could lose quorum and then the meeting just ends.
Yeah, if you disapprove to postpone, then the postponement resolution fails. Then we would be forced to vote on the resolution as it's presented. And you would need four members of the committee to say yes.
And you could no longer take no action. That is an action.
I think I'm going to disapprove.
Well, then we're going to take a vote, and if it goes down, it goes down. You understand that, right?
Wait, Abe.
Yeah. You understand that, right? If Joe and I vote against it, it's done.
What are we talking about?
So, Legislator Sperry is considering rescinding her yes to postpone.
I voted no on postponement.
So, now if any other legislator votes no on postponement, then we have to vote on it.
And then there, I mean, I just think there are still tweaks to be made to earn votes. So if you vote it down now, you're starting a clock of a petition of discharge where there's probably votes on the floor that you could have if you had time to address certain legislators' concerns. So you'd be starting a clock. That's my opinion, that I think the best thing for this legislation to pass in the future is probably to postpone.
I agree with that.
And address concerns, tweak, and then have the votes you need.
If this was a month from now and we were in the same place, I mean, this is the first significant conversation we've had this in this committee.
Yes.
If this was a month from now, I would probably welcome you to vote it down, right? Because, great, plant your flag in that, and we'll petition it to the floor. But I'm still looking forward to earning the votes of this committee, and a postponement, if it's the will of the body, I would say is the preferable outcome so that we can work to earn your votes for the support for this very important legislation.
I will change my vote to a yes for postponement.
Okay, so now, Legislator Sperry, if you want to change yours to no,
I'll keep it.
It's unanimous. It's unanimous for postponement. Okay,
just
so no old business. I'll accept the motion for adjournment.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I think that was easy.